Blog Talk Radio.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
Link established.
You're connected to the Access America Radio Network.
Ah, I have access.
Welcome to the Satellite Guys Radio Show. My name is Scott Raskowski, coming to you from Newington, Connecticut, where it's been a beautiful, gorgeous day here, and joined, as always, by our co-host of the show, Mr. Goalie Bob, the big ugly dish himself, Goalie Bob Nemitz. How are you doing tonight, Bob?
Pretty good, and to Charlie, yes, I do still use that big ugly dish, and man, the high definition I can get on that guy.
Yeah, well, that was an interesting Charlie chat last night. Kind of fast-paced. It was kind of unusual. But we had Ira Barr co-hosting the show, and Ira's kind of likes the fast-paced, highly polished stuff. So it was kind of neat. Some of the graphics they did were kind of interesting that they put together for the show. And didn't really answer too many questions, but still good to see the Charlie chat just the same.
Yeah, I really liked Ira as a host. It seems a little bit better, well-produced, and better put. And when Charlie says that show is definitely uncensored, yes, the show is uncensored. They took my question.
Well, you pre-taped it, though. They were kind of actually afraid of you, I think.
Yeah, there ain't nothing to be afraid of. I'm just a customer who wants some sports.
Well, we got a busy show tonight. Our first special guest up tonight is Robbie from WS International. Robbie, how you doing tonight?
Good, Scott. Hi, guys. How are you?
We're doing great. I understand that you have some huge news for us tonight as far as WS International goes, and you're opening up a new office. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure, yeah. We actually just got through launching it yesterday. Yesterday was our first day open. The new office is, or the new branch is located in Los Angeles, just about 20, 25 minutes north of the city of Los Angeles in Pacoima. We just opened that, distribution center yesterday. So we're pretty excited about it, looking forward to serving people here in the West Coast.
Oh, excellent. So for the people who are just tuning in and don't know anything about WS International or Galaxy Marketing, can you tell us a little bit about both companies?
Sure, that's no problem. WS International was actually made by me. We are a wholesale distributor and manufacturer of various satellite products, DICE-6 switches, motors, different size dish antennas, and anything satellite related. Our retail division is actually Galaxy Marketing. It's galaxy-marketing.com. And there you can find prices for, retail prices for the end user. And if there are dealers, they would need to go to wsidigital.com. And that's where that's our wholesale site. And we actually, we can private label for larger customers. And we have very good prices for the dealers, the resellers, the satellite installers. And our first office was actually opened in Atlanta, Georgia, in Marietta, which is about 20 miles north of the city of Atlanta. And about 2.5-3 years ago, we launched our office in Guangzhou, China, to kind of help us with the import and the manufacturing of the equipment that we sell here. And just recently, just this week, we opened up our distribution center in the West Coast.
Very interesting. So tell us a little bit more about WS International, because I understand a lot of your stuff that you sell is actually made exclusively for WS International, and that you sometimes resell it in private boxes for other companies. Is that the case?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. We actually have we work with many different engineers and many different R&D departments to basically kind of fine tune what may already be on the market to our liking. Basically, we always try to use, you know, the best parts out there. There's a lot of places that, you know, that they manufacture things and they try to use the cheapest parts possible. And I think that really reflects when the end user goes to use their products. We always try to pay a little bit more and, you know, and basically manufacture our stuff a little, with a little bit higher quality components and supplies, just so, you know, the customers are happy with our products. We don't just put our names on anything.
It's kind of interesting. When I first met Robbie, it was at one of the Satellite Expo shows a long, long time ago. And Robbie gave me an LMB to test out, and that LMB is still actually on my KU dish this day, and it works great. And normally,
if I'm not mistaken, that was about in 2006 at the Satellite Expo in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's still working great. And you know, I used to go through an LMB a year the way I was going through them, but not anymore. That thing's been working like a trooper.
That's great.
Well, excellent. We understand you got some new products. One of the ones I've seen that was really interesting to me that you announced the other day was the new mover, which is called the – hold on, I got to my screen here. What's the name of the mover?
SG91.
Yes, there we go.
It's actually the SG9120B, and that's a regular die-set motor with metal gears. And the original SG9120, which we came up with about – I don't know, like 5-6 months ago, those performed great. But the problem was they were using the 50-millimeter tube or the shaft, but many customers wanted to install their GeoSat Pro or their WineGuard satellite dishes on it. So we kept on getting requests for a motor with a smaller shaft and diameter, a 42-millimeter shaft, to go ahead and fit the WineGuard or the popular GeoSat Pro dishes that are out there. So we went ahead and put a smaller shaft on there, and that's our SG9120B. It's the exact same thing as the regular SG9120. It just has a smaller shaft.
Very interesting. Also, another product that caught my eye, and I've been having some kind of troubles moving my dish lately. My current positioner is going out, and that's the V-Box X. Tell us a little bit about that and what makes that a little different than the other products on the market.
Well, actually, the V-Box X, I have brought it to the market to do some market research on it. We don't have a very large quantity in stock, unlike all of our other products. It's a fairly new product for us, and hopefully, you know, from the test results that we get, we'll be able to either make improvements on it if we need to, or we can keep the box and start mass producing and bring more to the industry and to the market.
Very, very interesting. Now, I was going through your website today preparing for tonight's show, and I noticed something which caught my eye, and hopefully this is not a misprint, but I see you have some KU LMBs there that are labeled at 0.2. Is that a misprint, or is that for real?
No, that's actually for real. As far as, you know, some people say that it's not, some people say that it is. So far, we haven't been proved wrong. So, and we've been selling for quite a while now, and they're very popular on the market based on their performance. They have been tested, and actually there have been people who have tested it on the forum, on satelliteguys.us, versus many other different kinds and many other different brands, and they have all reported positive. I have yet to hear something negative about the LMBS.
That's an incredible.
And that's both on the DMX 522 and the 521.
That's an incredibly low temperature LNB. That's amazing. I remember a long time ago when it was like 10, you know, it was low one.
Yeah.
But 0.2.
Yeah, and then they think that. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that then they came out with one, and then Chaparral, theirs is a 0.8, and now yeah, 0.2, and you know, and the lower we go, you know.
Wow, that's really great. We're joined right now by Robbie from WS International and Galaxy Marketing. And, of course, as always, our phone lines are wide open. So if you have a question for Robbie, give us a call now, toll-free, 877-SAT-GUYS. That's 877-728-4897. And our chat room is open tonight. Not too many people in the chat tonight. I think a lot of people are outside enjoying the nice weather we're having, except for Goalie Bob, who's getting a ton of rain, I hear. And you can join us in the chat room at chat.satelliteguys.us. Good evening to D777JJ. Goldie Bob's in there. Digiblur's in there. Jacob M69, Jag 72, N1WBD. Satellite AV is in there. Hi, Brian. And also Tiger Prowler. Good evening to everybody who's in there chat room tonight. It's good to see everybody. All right, Robbie. Well, we got a lot to talk about because you got a lot of unique products at WS International. Another one that was interested to me is your DMX 242. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Sure. That's a that's actually a quad polar. It's dual C-band LMBS. It'll do both linear and circular, right circular, left circular, horizontal, vertical. Comes with a dielectric plate that you can put in there. That'll convert basically your circular signals into linear for the LME to be able to pick up. And comes with a flat scalar ring. And that's about it, you know. Very nice unit. It's getting to be very popular on the market. I don't know if you guys have kind of different websites and different, you know, people who talk about it. And on that one, I've heard a lot of positive reviews on it. And people seem to like it very much and accept it.
Well, the whole thing I like about that LMB and that really interests me about it is that it's a dual output. I find myself sitting there and wishing I had another input on my you know, for a separate satellite because there's stuff up there I want to watch and monitor two different things at the same time from the same satellite, and this would do it.
Absolutely, and the great thing about this is, you know, that there's also LMBs or LMBS, I should say, that are out there that do, you know, one voltage each output, either horizontal or vertical. This one does both horizontal and vertical on both ports. And the good thing about that is you can run it into, you know, switches. You can use them independently. Whatever you want to do, you got 20 receivers you want to hook up, you run it through a switch, and you'll be good to go.
That's really amazing. It's come a long way. And you know, when I started out, the only real LMBs out there were the Chaparral Coal Rotor 2s, you know, and very, very expensive. But the prices have come down, and the quality has gone way up. And that's really exciting for us satellite hobbyists.
Yeah, and that's what happens with the whole technology. With anything that has to do with technology, you'll see, you know, when something first comes out, it's going to be very expensive, just like the old Chaparrals were. And then all of a sudden you see something come in, like, for example, the DMX-741 or the DMX-741U that'll do both C-band and KU-band. And all of a sudden that'll cause the prices of the Chaparrals to drop. And eventually, you know, the price on the DMX-741s and the 741Us, those dropped as well. Just because demand goes up, people start, you know, seeing that it's a good product. They buy it, and our buying power becomes a lot more also, causing the prices to drop, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got Robbie on the phone with us now from WS International. And again, the phone lines are wide open, so if you want to give Robbie a call, ask him some questions. He's here for you at 877-728-4897 is the number to call in. And, Robbie, you seem to have a grip on, you know, especially when you're creating your own products to sell, of what consumers want in the future. And, you know, you're at a point now where you're releasing these new products. But without giving too much away, where do you see the satellite industry going in the free-to-air arena in the next couple of years? Have you seen anything interesting coming down the line that you're interested in making?
Well, I haven't. You know, I don't have anything, you know, specific in mind right now. Always, you know, things come to mind and things go. You know, but definitely they are. You know, on the horizon, I think it's a nice MPEG-4 DVB-S2 set-top box. You know, that may be another, you know, couple months and maybe another couple of years, depending on the market, that, you know, I really want to go ahead and develop and kind of bring in and let people enjoy and try to put every single gadget that every satellite hobbyist wants out there into a set-top box and give it to them. And, you know, especially with set-top boxes, they're a little bit more difficult to develop and to manufacture compared with other parts that are, you know, LMBs or motors or switches or what have you. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely going to, you know, I'm going to have to find some time to give it 110% to make sure that it's something that people are going to like.
No, I definitely agree with you on the DVB-S2 stuff. It seems like that is the wave of the future now, and there's a lot of stuff up there currently, especially if you like old TV shows. The RTNs have, what, 70-something feeds up there, 70-something channels, and it's incredible to watch up there. We got a question from the chat room right now. This one comes from Bob, N1WBD. He wants to know if WSI from time to time has refurbished satellite equipment for sale.
Okay, has any what for sale?
Refurbished equipment.
Yes, we do. We actually do run into products that we refurbish, especially set-top boxes. So, set-top boxes, motors, those are the two most popular things that, you know, we refurbish, and we try to basically put it out there and, you know, give the customers a great price on it. If anybody's interested in those, they're more than welcome to give us a call, either the Atlanta branch or the Los Angeles branch, and if we have anything in stock at that time, we'll be more than glad to make a deal and, keep them happy and keep ourselves happy as well.
That's very interesting. So where are you spending most of your time now, Robbie? Are you in California now, or are you spending time in Atlanta?
I'm actually in California now. I will be in California for most of the time. I live here now. I've totally moved from Atlanta to open up this branch and get this up and running. So this is my permanent home now. And it used to be that I would just come here, once in a while just to get away. So now I've got to find a new place to go get away.
Well, there's a lot of places to explore in California. We had an opportunity to head up to California and actually visit Satellite AV a couple of years ago, and that was my first time in California, and I couldn't believe how beautiful it was, especially all the mountains and looking down the mountains, driving around all those curvy roads, heading towards Satellite AV. It was beautiful sights and a beautiful area, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy it out there and find new things to look at. Well, Robbie, we're going to talk
so far
a little
bit. So
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said so far so good, yeah, absolutely.
Let's see here. So tell us the difference. Different types of LMBs and LMBFs that you have, different types that you offer to people, because I'm sure there's people looking for specific types, and you probably offer pretty much all of them.
Yeah, well, I would say all of them, but pretty much most of them, I would imagine, that we offer that's used here in North and South America. As far as Ku-band goes, our standard Ku-band LMBF is the DMX521, which is a light powder blue color, 0.2 dB standard LMBF. And as far as universal, we offer the LKU1-2A. That's the model number. And that has a noise figure of 0.4 dB. And people seem to like that works great on the WineGuard satellite antennas. And the as far as quads, we have the DMX524U, which is a quad output universal LMBF. That's a great performing LMBF as well. We have the DMX5421, which is actually a 4-degree monoblock that we brought in back about, I want to say, maybe a year ago. We introduced that, and people have been, buying those like crazy. And that's for our KU line. And then for our CKU line, we obviously have the DMX 741, the DMX741U, which the 741U has a universal KU band on it versus the DMX741, which has a standard KU band on it. And the universal one, the 741U model, is controlled by DISEC, and the standard 741 is controlled by a 22 kilohertz switch. I've got some stuff working in the pipes now to where we're trying to modify those two LMBFs and bring something a little bit different, but I'm not going to talk too much about that. And that's still in the works. I think people are going to be pretty excited about it when they see it. And then obviously we have the RC band models, which is the DMX241 and the 242s. The 241s have been getting spectacular reviews. They actually became pretty popular very quick once they hit the market. I'm pretty sure if you go search on Satellite Guys, you'll see people reporting on its performance, and they've been really, very happy with it.
Yeah, if you want to check out any of the reviews, we review a lot of stuff from WSI and a lot of other companies as well. Go to our free-to-air forums, and then you'll see a separate subforum for reviews, and you'll find a lot of great information there. Robbie, before we go any further, what got you personally interested in the satellite industry, and how did you get into the satellite industry?
You know what? I've always been interested in electronics. I was always interested in electronics, and right about 12 years ago or so, I started out selling Dish Network, believe it or not. And slowly, I came to find the free-to-air market, and that got me even more interested in satellite, just because when I was on Dish Network or DirecTV, for that matter, it felt like everything was in a box. Once I discovered free-to-air, it just kind of, you know, you step out of the box and you kind of see what else is out there, and that's the feeling that I had. And just, you know, the more I explored it, the more interested I became in it, you know. And I've always been into, you know, cable TV and satellite TV and, you know, communications and everything. So I just followed my passion, followed my hobby, and, you know, this is where I am now.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. What channels are some of your favorite free-to-air channels that are currently up there?
To be honest with you, I would be lying if I told you I haven't even watched TV in the past 2 months. Or if I hadn't been in the past 2 months. But, you know, originally I'm Persian. So, you know, obviously whenever I do watch it, I tune some of the Persian channels. I listen to some of the others at a radio station that's called Kol HaNeshama, which is a Hebrew station out of Israel. I listen to that once in a while. And really, you know, I don't get a whole lot of time anymore to watch TV, you know, if I had... I've got a great toy shop here, and I wish I could take advantage of it a little bit more and, you know, play around. But I really don't get to it as much as I'd like to, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know you've been spending a lot of time setting up your new Los Angeles location, and that's been a well-kept secret for the past 2 months because we knew you were doing it, but other people were wondering what you were doing and where you were at because you were MIA at some times, but glad to have you back. Also, don't forget that Satellite Guys is the home of the WS International Support Forum. So if you have WS International equipment and need help with it, well, we got a place to give you all the help you need. So check out that forum as well. Again, our phone lines are still wide open here. So come on in, guys. Don't be shy. Give Robbie a call. The number is to call.
It's
toll-free, 877-SAT-GUYS. That's 877-728-4897. And coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're supposed to be joined by Bandraba of Engadget HD, who was at the birth of ESPN 3D last week, and that should be kind of interesting as well. Have you checked out much 3D? I know you mentioned that you saw some at the NAB conference last year.
You know, I did. I saw it at the NAB. I haven't really had a chance to concentrate on it much, but the picture, it was high-definition 3D TV. And, I mean, it was gorgeous. It was just so realistic. And, you know, I haven't really had a chance to go to any of the 3D theaters yet, so I didn't have really anything to compare it to. But hopefully one of these days in the sunny Los Angeles, I'll get to, you know, get out and explore and go to one of the 3D movie theaters and, you know, experience it.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting, and it's exciting that it's finally becoming available to consumers at home. And we're going to be seeing a lot more 3D. And speaking of seeing a lot more things, I understand that you're going to be showing us some new equipment and some very special pricing on some of your equipment for Satellite Guys members.
Yeah, actually, later on this evening, I'll be publishing some very good special deals for all the Satellite Guys members, to kind of as a celebration of us opening up our Los Angeles office. We're going to have some, I mean, just spectacular deals on actuator arms, on our 90-centimeter dishes, on our coaxial cables, and our 524, DMX 524 LMBS, the universal model. And, you know, guys need to get on there and take advantage of the savings while they can.
Well, saving money is a good thing, especially in this economy, this day and age. And a lot of Satellite Guys love this time of the year and love stocking up on new equipment and, you know, aiming their dishes and tweaking their dishes, you know, from over the winter time. It's finally a nice time to get out there and do all kind of work on their things. And a good tool to do that is a good satellite finder. And I understand you offer some satellite finders as well. Can you tell us what you offer there?
Sure, absolutely, yeah. Our satellite finder, actually our most popular satellite finder now, is a new digital satellite finder. The DSF 120 Plus, that's a yellow color digital satellite finder that's brand new to the market. Used to be before where there still is, the SF99s and the SF95s that people used to buy with the buzzers for tailgating or just installing, you know, very, very simple antennas. And the SF95 was actually my first satellite meter that I used to install a satellite dish. So, and it was good. It was good, but now the digital one will actually give you a much better reading, much more accurate reading. And you can really use it, and it performs well on low and medium-powered satellites, not just high-powered satellites like the SF99 and the SF95s do. And that's been getting very popular, you know, very good ratings as well. There's actually a couple of reviews on it on Satellite Guide.
Wow.
So.
Well, that's interesting there as well, because, you know, there are numbers of really expensive meters on the market, but, you know, some really affordable ones that can get the job done just as well. And you're proving that there with your satellite meters, and that's a great thing, because some satellite guys don't want to spend $700 on a satellite meter, and you know, you can do
right,
that.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, the ones that you have, the analog SF95s and the analog SF99s, you know, they're a little bit for the end user, not the hobbyist. You know what I mean? They're great as far as, you know, getting you close to the satellite. And you know, if you're going to install a satellite dish once or twice, then, you know, go ahead and spend your money, get your analog meter, spend $10. But if you're going to, you know, use it all the time and you're a hobbyist, I would really recommend the DSF 120 Plus. It's about, you can probably get them off of eBay for, like, you know, $35, $40. You can get them retail probably for around like $50 or so. So, you know, the price is very attractive, and the performance is actually very, very good and solid as well.
So if a person wants to become a WS International retailer and resell your products, how do they go about that?
It's very, very simple. All they do is just log on to our website, wsidigital.com. They click on where they become a reseller, and there's a little electronic registration form that they fill out. Once they fill out that form, it'll give them three additional forms, which is the paperwork that they need to fill out. It's a credit card authorization form, it's a registration form, and a tax ID certificate. They fill out, they get that sent in to us, we call them up, we set them up in our system, and we give them a username and password for them to be able to log into our website and check out our wholesale pricing. And they're very simple. All you need is a business license and tax ID certificate. You can get those for fairly cheap. People are, you know, getting started in the satellite business, you know, very, very easily, and making a killing, actually. So very simple to get started.
Well, very interesting to hear that. And then, you know, we've been talking about all the great products you offer. If someone wants to buy your products that's not a retailer, how do they go about that?
Well, they can either visit one of our resellers, Hypermedisat. They sell our products, and he's a great dealer. Leo Wall, they sell our products. There's many other different websites out there, Satellite Electronics, that sell our products. If people do want to buy directly from us, you know, sometimes our retail prices are a little bit higher than our dealers and resellers, just because we try not to compete with our own, you know, dealers and resellers. If they can go to galaxy-marketing.com and they can look at all our prices, and that's our retail site.
And the retail site, once again, the URL for that is galaxy-marketing.com.
Yep, www.galaxy-marketing.com, and there they can find all the prices, you know, all the special promotions we have, and, you know, or they can call us up either on our Atlanta office, or they can call us up at our Los Angeles office and get pricing right over the phone, or they can just send us an email.
Very, very interesting. Well, Robbie, thank you for joining us tonight here on the Satellite Guys radio show. It's been our pleasure having you. And also, thank you for your support of Satellite Guys. You just celebrated your one-year anniversary with us, and we hope that we were very profitable for you over the year. And thank you for your support, because in this tough time, we need all the support we can get. So thank you again, Robbie.
Absolutely, Scott. I appreciate you guys having me on the show. I appreciate your forum, and I appreciate everybody out there who supports our business and who gives us their business. We really do appreciate it. And if there's anything we can do for you, you know, just give us a call. Let us know. We'll be happy to take care of our customers.
All right, Robbie. Well, thanks again for coming on the Satellite Guys Radio Show. We wish you much success in your new office in Los Angeles. And hopefully some Satellite Guys start knocking on your doors, because we got a lot of California Satellite Guys members out there.
Hey, come on by. We'll get you guys some tea and biscuits.
All right. There we go. Thank you, Robbie. That's Robbie from WS International on the phone with us there. And he's in California now. And let's make sure I click the right button here. There we go. Okay.
We don't want to cut off the co-host now.
Yeah, I got to make sure I don't cut off the wrong person here. That's the whole issue. So that was Robbie. And let's go to the lines here. And I think we have Ben on the line from Engadget HD. Ben, is that you?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. How you doing? We're live on the air. And let me introduce you. You are one of the writers for Engadget HD and also a very knowledgeable guy on Windows Media Player, Windows Media Center, and all kinds of neat electronical gadgets. It's a pleasure having you on the show with us tonight, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, let's get into it. You got an interesting invitation from ESPN to witness the birth of ESPN 3D. Why don't you tell Satellite Guys listeners a little bit about what you saw and some of the neat things you saw at ESPN?
Yeah. You know, we've shown a lot of interest in 3D ever at Engadget. And at first, I wasn't very interested in 3D at all. In fact, I thought it was a gimmick and it was silly. And, you know, it wasn't until I saw my favorite content in 3D that I became of an evangelist, you know. I think if you're not into animated features and you see an animated feature in 3D, it's not going to just all of a sudden turn non-compelling content compelling. And I guess I had shown enough interest in 3D that I had talked to ESPN, asked them some other questions, because I knew they were going to launch a 3D channel, and they sent me an invite, as well as a couple of the other Engadget writers, to head up to Bristol, Connecticut, and, you know, be there when they launched their, you know, their 3D channel, their first 3D broadcast of, I guess it was South Africa versus Mexico.
Yeah, the World Cup game that was shown, and how did it look?
It looked great. I mean, I'm not much of a soccer fan. It kind of goes back to that compelling content. It didn't just all of a sudden make soccer interesting to me. But it was, I could definitely see some interesting shots and some exciting shots that, I don't know, that did kind of look cool, even though it necessarily just didn't automatically turn into a soccer fan. They had their demo on a 72-inch Samsung DLP, and, you know, DLPs have actually been available. They're the first 3D TVs that have been available for a couple of years now. They're Mitsubishi and Samsung have made them, but unfortunately, because they were the only TVs out there that were 3D, there wasn't much content, and there wasn't any 3D Blu-ray, there wasn't any 3D broadcasts, and so obviously this kind of, you know, ESPN 3D, and that kind of changes everything, at least for sports fans. So they had that at one end of the room, and at the other end of the room, they had a Hyundai Circular Polarized, those passive glasses. Uh-huh. And it was kind of interesting to be able to, you know, see the same content on both TVs, although there aren't really any consumer-priced, circular polarized glasses available. You know, most of the active shutter ones are the ones that people are actually going to be able to buy. And I still thought that the active shutter DLP looked better, but it might have more to do with the size and the DLP versus DLCD and things of that nature, more than it had to do with the actual 3D technology.
Very interesting. And so they had a big party down there. And but before you got to go see the 3D kickoff, you also got to go see a lot of the ESPN studios. And you got to see some interesting technology involving Xboxes and iPads. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, they gave us a tour of some of their newer buildings and their new facilities that they're using to transmit this 3D and a lot of the stuff they upgraded. And when we were touring the new building with the new 3D control room, we ran across a new teleprompter demo they were working on. And basically, you know, everyone's seen these, right? It's where the analyst writes right on the screen. And they were using an iPad to, you know, as a tool to annotate on the screen and stuff. It was kind of cool. It was actually pretty useful and kind of cool at the same time. Then in another room, oh, go ahead.
So basically they were taking the iPad, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they were running some kind of VNC type client on it. So the iPad was actually accessing a PC desktop, which was running the drawing software on it. But by using the tablet wireless like that, they were able to draw like teleprompter style, John Madden, you know, circle this and write this on the screen and do all that kind of stuff. Is that the way that worked?
Yeah, pretty much. So it gave them a third option, right? Traditionally, they had to either be standing right in front of the screen and draw on it with their finger, right in front of the PC and draw on it with a mouse, and now the third option is to carry the tablet device in their hand and draw on that. And, you know, that prevents them from, you know, if they want to show the analyst while he's drawing, right, and maybe have the thing in the background, kind of the way the news people, the weather people, we've all seen the weather people do it. Except now he doesn't have to turn his back to us, right? He can face us, draw on the tablet screen, and then behind him you'll see what he's drawing, the annotations he's drawing on the telestrator behind him. So it is actually a pretty useful scenario. They also were using an iPod Touch, and I think they even had a Palm Pre there, but I'm not exactly sure how they were using the Palm Pre. They didn't show us a demo of that. I just happened to see it on the counter. But then in another room, they were showing us a demo where they were doing like 3D renders, and they were putting an analyst right in the middle of a 3D game. So it looked like almost like a Xbox 360 video game where the players were strong and the analyst was standing there amongst the players and you know, talking about the way to, you know, the play and things of that nature. And they had all these sensors throughout the room so that they could tell how high things were and keep everything in scale. And then they can also use those sensors for real-time telemetry on, like, say, like the X Games, where they're trying to see how far someone jumps, or even the Olympics, where they're trying to see how high someone jumps, things of that nature. They can, you know, they have this, it's kind of hard to explain, but they have these sensors, and they're feeding a lot of that data into just a regular Xbox 360, or maybe it was a developer one, I can't remember. And from there, they could, it gave them a platform to do their development versus, you know, starting from something off of the shelf, you know, because the, you know, 360 is a purpose-built 3D device.
Right, right. And the Xbox that I seen in the pictures on EngadgetHD.com was a developer Xbox. It wasn't your standard homebrew, correct?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the picture you're talking about off the top of my head, but I mean, we took a lot of pictures from over there. But yeah, I think it might have been a developer one. Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting and really a neat use of the technology. I mean, instead of going out and buying expensive pre-made things, which probably don't exist yet, they're creating the stuff on the fly as they need it using the technology that they have, and I find that very unique. You know, I don't live too far from ESPN, and I've been there numerous times, and a lot of times, well, they used to do this in the past, I don't know if they do this now, but if you drove by ESPN, there was always an ESPN trailer truck out in front of ESPN. And if you wonder what that trailer truck was for, a lot of times for baseball games, they would not send the announcers out to the baseball stadiums because of the cost of airfare and flying them out there. And they already had camera crews out there covering it. So what they used to do was they used to stick the announcers in the truck outside of ESPN where they were isolated by themselves, and they'd do the broadcast from there. The whole reason they did that is because if they kept the announcers in the studio, the guys would get too distracted looking at all the monitors on the walls and all the other games going on, and they couldn't call the game as effectively as if they were forced to watch the game that was on TV in front of them. And it was kind of a neat trick that they did at ESPN at one time.
Huh. That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't see any trailers when I was there. But they're changing a lot of things there. I think we were talking about how they're moving the satellites from out front, and they have that new farm in back. And they have this really weird-looking satellite I've never seen before. I don't know. I can't remember what they called it, but it was, like, long. It wasn't. It was, like, stationary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how they pick
up. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yep, I do. And it looks kind of weird because, you know, I've been, you know, at ESPN since the beginning, and it looks kind of weird driving by there now without the dishes in the front. If you drove by there a year or two ago, there'd be about 16, 17 big, humongous dishes out there. And they got a space on a hill about a quarter mile away, and they moved all the big satellite dishes over there, and they're getting rid of all the dishes in front. And last week I had the pleasure to go and, you know, see Ben and get together with him, and drove by ESPN and noticed that they were taking down one of the big dishes. It was kind of weird to see the dish pointing straight up in the air in preparation for being removed from its pedestal.
Yeah, that definitely was odd. It looked like something out of Contact or something. They're listening for aliens or something. Yeah, you know, it's funny because you said that the new satellite phone's like a quarter mile up the hill, but you know, their new buildings are like right next to it. So they just really have grown. I mean, they have multiple entrances now. The other thing that was funny about it from my perspective is it's like right in the middle of the neighborhood. You know, like just driving along, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's ESPN. And you wouldn't even know it because the sign's so small. You know, especially now the satellite dishes are in the back. You could drive right by it and never know you even drove by it if you didn't know what you're looking for.
Yeah, yeah. It's
I'll tell you what you couldn't miss. You couldn't miss a Otis Elevator Test Tower. My God, is that thing huge.
Yep,
I thought it was like something out of a movie. What's that?
One of the places I wanted to take you while we're down there was actually there's an amusement park directly across the street from ESPN, but it was closed on the night we got together. I would have took you down there and showed you Lake Compounds. It's actually America's oldest continually operated amusement park. It's over 100, and it's 150 years this year that it's been operational.
Wow.
Kind of incredible. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, lots of amusement parks here in Florida, though, so, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So we're with
we got plenty of those.
And Ben's from Engadget HD. And so, Ben, today the iPhone 4 went on sale. Did you happen to get to order one?
I tried, but, you know, their stinking website has been down all day.
I tried from 5 a.m. Eastern time until about 6 p.m. tonight, and I couldn't get my order through online. So what I ended up doing was downloading the Apple Store application. I find it funny that they have an Apple Store application that you got to download from the App Store. But you download the application, and now I have one reserved for me that I got to pick up next Thursday at the Apple
Store. Yeah, you know, I'm not really into that whole reserve thing. You know, I'm not.
But I want
one. I want one too, but that reserve thing is still first come, first serve. You know, it's still not a... That just gives them a way to try to figure out how many they should have on stock at a certain location. You still got to wait in line. Usually, at least it's the second line. But last year, I pre-ordered mine, and the thing just showed up in the mail via FedEx that morning, which was perfect. Now that's the way I really want to go. So I'm going to keep trying to do the pre-order. You know, what's funny is once they get you in. It makes it impossible for you to really look at another device, right? Because, you know, like right now, if I wanted to buy the Evo, I would have to, like, pay an ETF with AT&T. But AT&T, they'll let me buy the iPhone 4, without paying any additional fees. You know what I mean? So it's kind of funny how they manage to lock all these people into the new phones each year. And prevent you from going. I'm not saying I would definitely go to a different phone. I'm just saying, like, my choice is either pay, you know, $100 and some to get out of my contract, wait a year, or buy the new iPhone. It seems like a pretty easy decision to me.
Well, one thing I don't like about when they release these iPhones or iPads or whatever is when the iPad came out, I had to go to the Apple Store because I needed a special cable, which I didn't have. So I went down to the local mall, and it was the same day that the iPad came out. It actually was the day after the iPad came out. So I tried walking into the Apple Store, and I was stopped at the entrance by a guard. And he says, what do you want? And I told him, I need a cable. And he says, sorry, we're only selling iPads today. And they actually turned me away, which kind of aggravated me. And so I'm not really looking forward to going and sitting in that line. And also,
yeah, you know, that's odd. That's odd because I remember I stood in line for the first two iPhones. And I specifically remember, at least at the one down here in Tampa, that they had a separate line just for people who wanted to make regular purchases. And they were you had to wait because, you know, it still was busy. But they did let people in just to buy accessories and whatever. There was like literally a separate non-iPhone purchase line. If you're buying anything by an iPhone, you got in that line, you could wait and then buy your cable or whatever you wanted. So, you know, that's been over a year now. So I guess maybe they got rid of that completely. But yeah, I agree. That's not really what you want, right? Luckily, you can go pick up a lot of those type of accessories at Best Buy, but I mean, come on, that's just wrong.
Well, yeah, what they actually did is most of the shelves were gone. Most of the products were gone except for the stuff that was on the walls, and they put up a lot of tables, and they had the tables set up so they could program everybody's iPads for them. You know, so I guess they felt for those couple of days it was more profitable for them to sell iPads and get everybody in for iPads than sell the trinkets and the software and stuff like that. So. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, any business, you have a set number of resources, and you have to allot those resources appropriately, which, you know, it's unfortunate, but I can see both perspectives. It would have made me mad, too, though.
So, let's go back.
You know, on another topic that might be a little more Dish-related here, Dish came out today and installed the new Dish for me and the 922 receiver.
Oh, you got the 922 installed. Give it 24 hours before you really review it, because it takes a while for the buffers to build up and a lot of the channel logos to show up and a lot of the features to actually start working properly. But after 24 hours, take a good look at it and let us know what you think. But since you've had it hooked up, have you had a chance to go through it a little bit? And if you have, what do you think about it?
I mean, I've actually had a chance to play with it for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And, you know, my initial impressions are good. It's actually, I like the user interface. It's not perfect, but I do like it. And there's some little quirks I've already discovered that are kind of head-scratchers. Like, I couldn't figure out how to search for content for a while until I finally realized that apparently the only way to search for content is to hit the search button on the remote. There's not like a search option in the user interface. And, yeah, there's just some other weird things that I'm just not used to that I'm still kind of getting more, you know. Like, for example, the up and down arrows also work at the channel up and down, which just seems a little odd to me since, you know, channel up and down seems to be a kind of common button that you use on a remote, and that where that dial pad is isn't necessarily the most common area of the remote. So I'm, you know, there's a couple of little things like that, you know, that are just – first kind of head scratchers, but the look of it is good. I like the way it looks, and the responsiveness is also good. I've been real impressed, and there's a lot of configuration options as well. Like I said, I literally just got it in and I played with it for a few minutes. Usually the way I review DVRs is I review them like I use them. You know, I load them up and I schedule them to record all the normal shows I record, and I let them fill up, you know, let them record like all kinds of stuff, and I usually record them over a long period of time. So I'll start writing notes tonight, and I'll just every single time I use it, I'll just jot down notes nonstop until I kind of feel like I've tried everything and played with everything. And then at that point, then I kind of compose that into those notes into something that someone might actually want to read. But I've been trying to get a little more methodical with my reviews lately because there are so many DVRs and you know, they don't necessarily compare. You know, some have some features, some have others. So I try to, you know, focus on two different areas. One is how easy and enjoyable is it to do your daily DVR functions, right? Like browse recorded TV, find something to record, check in your schedule recordings, delete shows, you know, things like that. And then focus on the stuff that it can do that other DVRs can't do, like in this case, the Sling functionality video on demand, because a lot of decent DVRs can't do video on demand. Unfortunately, none of the cable companies can ever learn how to make a decent DVR. So, you know, I have one little question, though. I'm sure this is old hat to most of your listeners, but, you know, that when they were coming to install the dish, they were, I guess there's a 1002 and a 1004, is that right?
Yep.
Which one's better, or does it not really matter?
Well, the 1002 points at the Western Arc, which is the 110, 119, and 129 orbital locations. And then the dish 1000.4, that points at the Eastern Arc, which is 72.7, 77, and 61.5. And depending on how you're in Florida, so depending on how far south down you are, you may actually get a Western Arc dish than an Eastern Arc dish. Did they give you the dish 1000.2 or the 1000.4?
I got the one that points further south.
I think you got the one.
And I had trees. I had trees to the west of me. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember. I got the numbers confused already. But I remember he was saying that this one definitely points more southern than the DirecTV one. That's not a great mix point. So now my house looks like yours. Well, maybe not that many dishes. Maybe not that many, but I got two dishes in antenna, so it's more than anybody else in the neighborhood. So this one points more southerly than the other one of the two, whatever which one that is.
That's Eastern Arc, because if it was the other one, you'd be basically pointed to the same place the DirecTV dish is pointed.
Yeah, so it doesn't point that way. He said that there were too many trees. The DirecTV one works fine with that, but he said that there were too many trees for me to hit that one. Does that sound right to you? I mean, what's the difference?
The big difference is that everything on the Eastern Arc is all MPEG-4, while everything except for the HD is MPEG-2 on the Western Arc. So that's the big difference there.
So it sounds like the Eastern Arc's better then.
Yeah, for future-proof, it is. And one of the things I think you're going to like about the 922, and it's also going to be one of the things you hate about the 922, is the Slingbox feature, especially watching in high definition. The high definition from this Slingbox looks worlds better than the Slingbox Pro HD unit. I don't know why it looks so much better, but it's so crisp and clean. It's really incredible. However, you're going to be annoyed by it because the only way you can watch it in high definition is through the Dish Network website, which I find really annoying that they won't let you use Sling Player software to watch a Slingbox.
Yeah, that is annoying. You know, it's funny, as I never was able to watch HD on the Slingbox Pro HD because I use a Mac and they never had HD Mac software. So, you know, I guess maybe I won't even notice. I wouldn't notice that if you wouldn't point it out because I don't have a PC to be annoyed with it on, you know.
The HD works fine on the website on the Mac.
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't think the HD works fine at all on the Mac. Maybe it does. Maybe I haven't tried it in a while. I haven't played with Slingbox Pro HD in some time.
For the Slingbox Pro HD, you cannot watch it in high definition on a Mac. They still haven't upgraded the software for that. However, the 922...
So, by the browser or... So, then not even watching on the browser, huh?
Right.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah, so, like I said, I probably wouldn't even notice that if you wanted to point it out to me because I don't have a PC to try it on.
Well, you'll see the 922 and you'll be pretty impressed.
Yeah, like I said, so far so good, but you know, the proof is when you use it for a while and you get it loaded up with all your series recordings and you start depending on it and then that's when you really can start to get used to it. You know, I got the over-the-air module, and the thing I don't really understand is, like, I have four tuners now. Is that right? Since I have the over-the-air module and two satellite tuners.
That's correct. You can record up to four things at one time, so two over the air and two satellite.
So in order for me to do that, do I need to schedule my recordings special so that the over-the-air stuff gets recorded over the air, or we'll just automatically figure out that the show I want to record on ABC is available over the air and just record it?
Well, no, you got to tell it which channel you want to record it off of. So if something's on channel, I don't know your channel numbers down there, but if something's on channel 33, the satellite will record off 33.0. However, your over-the-air stuff will be 33-1. So if you want to record it off the air, you tell it to record off 33-1.
Oh, so they it doesn't just merge the two channels together?
No.
So that there's just multiple available? Huh.
Which is kind of good.
That's kind of crummy.
Because, well, it's actually good in a way, especially when you're doing some AV comparisons of what signal is better, off the air or dish network. And it's kind of surprising, and you'll find this out, that sometimes the dish network signals is better than what's coming over the air, because over the air is broadcasting with so much multicast, casting with different, you know, sub-channels. And the bit rate being sent to them over the fiber link is actually higher bit rate than what's being sent over the air. So sometimes the HD looks better on dish than it does on the over-the-air signal. And kind of fun to compare both and see which one's better.
I'll have to look out for that. I know with DirecTV here in Tampa, their collection method is just to grab the over-the-air signal, so you don't get to do that. But I'll definitely check and see how they're doing the dish locals. On Media Center, when you have multiple tuners of different types, it just lets you choose which one you prefer per channel. So, you know, channel 33, you can say, I prefer the over-the-air, and if the over-the-air is not available, then use the satellite tuners. Then you only get one showing up in the guide. By default, it shows both in the guide, but if you hide one of them, it will automatically just use the other tuners on the other one if it runs out of those tuners. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, yeah. Just tuning in, you're listening to the Satellite Guys Radio Show, and we're joined right now by Ben Draba of Engadget HD. And Ben was lucky enough to attend the inaugural broadcast of ESPN 3D this past week at the ESPN headquarters in Bristol, Connecticut. And we actually got a couple questions in the chat room. Someone wanted to know if you got a headache watching the 3D, because a lot of people are reporting getting headaches by watching the 3D movies in the theaters.
You know, I did not get a headache when I was watching the 3D at all. You know, I was trying to work at the same time because I was trying to write my impressions and things of that nature. And, you know, what was funny is that I did get annoyed by the glasses when I was trying to look at my computer screen. So it was kind of annoying to look up and down and then take the glasses on and off. But one interesting note is that I actually do get a headache and I get nauseous when I play first-person shooter video games. And one really weird anomaly that I haven't quite explained yet is that when I saw Avatar at home in 2D, I got more nauseous than I did when I saw it in 3D at the theater, which I really can't explain.
Interesting.
But to answer the question, no, I didn't. I don't get nauseous when I watch the 3D. Well, you know, the funny thing about it is a lot of people do get nauseous when they play video games, but that usually doesn't stop them. You keep playing anyway.
Avatar was the first 3D movie where the 3D really didn't annoy me. In fact, I forgot I was wearing the glasses. You know, I go see a lot of kids' movies because I have kids. And when I go see the kids' movies, I take my glasses off for a couple times during the movie, just let my eyes rest for a minute, and then put them back on. But for Avatar, I kept them on the entire time and enjoyed it. It was a great presentation.
Yeah, I think it has something to do with the animation. I really do, I think that's even in parts of Avatar, there's more animation than there is, than there is real, and I think those are the parts really that are more that will actually get you more sick than the other parts.
Excellent.
That makes sense.
Yep. We're coming up to the end of the show here. We're coming up to the top of the hour. So before we go, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Engadget and Engadget HD and what you do there and how people can find out more about your work.
Yes, of course. So, you know, Engadget HD is just kind of the HD arm of Engadget, which is, we'd like to think, is the best tech blog on the Internet. We've won quite a few awards, and I think we do a fantastic job, if I don't say so myself. I've been writing there for, I guess, almost 4 years now, and we cover TV, Blu-ray players, some satellite news, but honestly, most of the satellite news we cover comes from satelliteguys.us. So if you're getting your satellite news from there, you probably got everything that we're covering. But we, you know, it is nice. It is kind of a nice overall comprehensive HD news site, especially now we've been covering a lot of 3D and Blu-ray and some surrounding technologies, and of course 3D, you know, of course video games and DVRs and media centers and you know, just about everything else. And you can also find me on Twitter at VJDraw.
All right. Well, go with Bob. We got a couple seconds left. Anything from you?
Very good. Thanks to our guests.
Okay. All right. We're out of time, so we'll catch you guys next week. And if you're listening on the Access America Radio Network via satellite or via the internet, stay tuned because the After Party Party is coming up in just a few minutes here on the Satellite Guys radio show, radio network. And thank you again, Ben, for joining us. It's been great having you on. Hopefully you can join us again in the future.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All righty.